Mary, Emma, and Company by Ralph Moody, University of Nebraska Press, 1961, Chapter 7, A Pretty Reasonable Fellow. Thank you, Lord, that I have a voice that can speak, and we have ears that can hear, and we have imaginations that let us capture in our mind what we think we hear in this story. So I pray that that for each of the kids and grandkids and all who listen to this, that the imagination would build a family that's being explained and shown in detail, that we would enjoy the characters of Ralph and his family and his mom, especially as she navigates being a single mom because his dad had died, and Lord, it's tough. So teach us to be empathetic and to love, in Jesus' name. Amen. With us, good luck and bad luck always seem to have come in waves. We seem to be right in the middle of a good luck wave. On Monday, Mr. Durant talked to the owner of the big house on Spring Street and got it for us. On Tuesday morning, Mother gave me the first month's rent before she went to work, and I took it to Mr. Perkins, the landlord's wife, when I went to deliver her groceries. Then, on Wednesday night, I sat up and played cribbage with Uncle Frank until nearly 10 o'clock. After we'd finished, he'd picked up the paper and read it as I made up my bed on the floor. I was all ready to crawl into it when he called to Mother. Mary Emma, this might be a chance for you to pick up some furniture. Old Grandma Maddox over on Myrtle Street died yesterday, and they're going to have the funeral Friday. Her son's coming down from New York, but I don't have a notion he'll want to ship the stuff back up there. He might sell it for a pretty reasonable price. Did Mrs. Maddox have a nice home? Mother asked. Looked nice and neat from the outside, Uncle Frank answered. But I was never in it. I expect the stuff is pretty old-fashioned. Grandma must have been in her 90s. I'm afraid her things would be too expensive for us, Frank, Mother called back from the kitchen. We're going to start off with just as little as we can, then add to it as we go along. Well, you might find this Maddox a pretty reasonable fellow, Uncle Frank called back. It says here he's a big lawyer, and the bigger they are, the harder they fall. The second he said big lawyer, it was as if somebody had turned on a light in my head. I jumped up and called out, I know him. Then I remembered that I didn't, but I was sure he must be the same Maddox boy that let the hogshead of molasses get away from him in the grocery store. I started to tell the whole story to Uncle Frank, but Mother called, some other time, son. You'll have to be up early in the morning, and it's time you were asleep. I was up good and early the next morning, and while Mother was getting breakfast and Uncle Frank was shaving, I found the piece he'd been reading in the paper, cut it out, and put it in my pocket. As soon as I got down to the store, I showed it to Mr. Householder and asked him if the lawyer wasn't the same boy who used to work in the store. Well, 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 bless my soul, he said when he'd read it. Couldn't be no other but him, Richard. Richard, now ain't it curious I couldn't think of his first name. Come to think of it, nobody ever called him that around here. He was always Dickie, Dickie Maddox. Well, 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 ain't seen or heard tell of him in 25 years. Mr. Householder had just put his morning silver sliver of tobacco in his mouth when I took the piece of paper from him. He sort of gathered the quid together with his tongue, rolled it over a couple times, and poked it away in his cheek. Poor old Grandma Maddox, passed on and gone, he said in a sorrowful voice. Then he gave the chew another little poke with his tongue and said, don't know why I said that anyways. Kind of expect the poor old soul was sort of glad to go. Expect lots of them is glad to go when the time comes. Old lady hadn't took much interest in life since Henry passed on. He was her husband, Dickie's pa. Don't calculate Dickie will stay on something to close up the house and maybe sell it. Do you think Mr. Maddox would sell the furniture? I asked. Lord, love you. Of course he'll sell it. What else would he do with it? Don't have a notion. There's a stick of it less than 60 years old. What would a big lawyer like him want with all the old stuff, the likes of that? I know, I said, but I meant at a price somebody could afford to pay. Oh, I don't expect he'd want all outdoors for it. Why? Well, I said, you know we rented the big house next to the fire station beginning the first of the month, and we haven't any furniture for it. And, well, bless my soul, if I ain't getting simpler minded by the year, of course you need furniture. Now, what was the matter with my head that I didn't think about it? And there wasn't no reason Dickie Maddox couldn't sell the old lady's stuff for most anything he was offered. Let me see. Funeral's going to be up to the Baptist church at 10 o'clock, ain't it? If things was so I could get away from the store tomorrow morning, I could take care of the store for you, I told him. Mother will always write a note for me if I have to stay out of school for something important. Don't doubt you could do it for a couple of hours in a pinch. How many beans in a quart? A pound and 14 ounces, I told him. How much is kerosene? 14 cents a gallon, but 8 cents for half a gallon, I said. Well, 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 learning fast, ain't you? Best to get on with washing them windows. Time's a flying. Just might happen I'll take in old Grandma Maddox's funeral. Ain't seen or heard tell of Dickie in more than 25 years. Don't have a notion he'd remember me anyways. I'll think about it, enduring the day, and leave you know before you get home tonight. I think Mr. Haushalter wanted to talk to Mr. Durant before he said it'd be all right for me to tend the store while he went to Mrs. Maddox's funeral. But just before we locked up that night, he told me, "If your ma's agreeable to you staying out of school in the forenoon tomorrow, I don't know what I'd take in old Grandma Maddox's funeral. Of course, I'd come down and get you started off in good shape before I went, and happily, I wouldn't go out to the burying grounds at all. That way, I'd probably be back well before noontime." I told him I'd tell Mother, and that I was sure she'd say it would be all right. Then, when I was nearly up to Ubel's drug store, he called me back and told me, "Now, don't say nothing about the old lady's furniture. A man's in bad business when he counts his chickens afore he puts the hen a settin'." I was waiting outside the store door when Mr. Haushalter got there the next morning. He was a few minutes late, but he was all dressed up in a blue serge suit and a white shirt, and he had his shoes shine till they sparkled in the light from the street lamp. The suit was one I think he must have had for a long, long time. The lapels of the coat were wide, but no longer than my hand. It buttoned right up to the knot of his tie, and it was tight enough around the middle that there were scallops between the buttons. After he'd unlocked the doors and the cash drawer under the counter, he only fed Matilda and looked at her kittens. Then he kept away from things that might get his suit dirty and told me how to get the fire going good and things I need to know while he was away. I think Mr. Haushalter and I were both kind of anxious for the funeral time to come. He kept walking up and down the length of the store as if he didn't know what to do with himself, and I wanted to have as much time as I could to run the store alone before Mr. Durant get in with his morning orders. On just about every other trip Mr. Haushalter made up and down the floor, he'd think of something else he should have told me. Of course, I don't remember them all, but one time he stopped and told me, "Now, it's all right to charge stuff to most of the folks that come in here, but there is them that you'll have to fight shy of, and seeing you alone in the store, they'd be just the ones that might come in and get a raft of the stuff charged. You know the Smitherses in the house you folks have rented? Well, them. And then there's the Foxes, not the ones on Washington Street, but the ones down by the brickyards. If any of them come in, just tell them it'll have to be for cash before you fetch out the stuff. Oh, yes, that littlest Jacob's boy, if you have to get him kerosene or something or other out of the back room, he'll snitch an orange if you don't keep an eye on him." It was about 9:30 when Mr. Haushalter left for the funeral, and I made up my mind that while he was gone, I'd do things just the way he always did them. The first thing I did was go to the tobacco case, get out the long plug of black BL, and slice off a sliver exactly the width of the dent mark. Then I folded it 4 times before I put it in my mouth, just the way Mr. Haushalter did. I barely started to gather it into a quid with my tongue when Miss Heath, my Sunday school teacher, came in for a gallon of kerosene. If I hadn't known her, or she'd just said, "A gallon of kerosene, please," I would have been all right, I think, but she didn't. As she came down the 2 steps inside the door, she sang out, "Isn't this a lovely morning? Do you have mornings like this in Colorado?" I managed to say, "Yes'm," sort of around the chew without having any trouble, and I got pretty well when she asked if I was tending the store all alone. I got by pretty well, but when she asked me why Mr. Haushalter wasn't there and where he'd gone, I was licked. There were only 2 things I could do, either run the risk of having the chew fall out of my mouth if I tried to talk around it, or swallow it. I swallowed it, but it didn't stay down more than 10 seconds after I got hold of Miss Heath's kerosene can and escaped into the back room. And I didn't feel a bit well when I took the can back to her and asked, "Charge it?" Miss Heath seemed to be nearly as shaken up as I felt, and she looked at me as if she were terribly worried. "What happened to you?" she asked. "Did you hurt yourself? Why, you're as white as white as a pillowcase." And I thought I heard a sound as if you were crying back there. Oh my. My stomach felt as if it were as if it were on fire, and my mouth was almost running over with saliva that kept pouring into it. But I managed to say, "No, ma'am, I just got a little dizzy spell for a minute, but I'm all right now." I had to answer four or five more questions, and I hope I wouldn't be sick again. Oh no. I hope I wouldn't be sick again before she went out, saying that she must talk to mother about my having dizzy spells. From the minute Mr. Householder had mentioned letting me tend the store alone, I'd been hoping I'd have lots of customers so I could show both them and him what a good job I could do. After Miss Heek went out, I didn't want to see anybody or have anybody see me, but it didn't work out that way. Half of the women in the neighborhood must have come in, and every one of them chatted like a blue jay, asking me if I didn't feel well and where Mr. Householder was, and if it wasn't a lovely morning. For me, it wasn't. My stomach still felt. Oh, I'm sorry. My stomach still felt as if there were a fire in it. The water ran into my mouth so fast that I had to swallow every time I tried to answer a woman's question, and the swallowing gave me the hiccups. I could usually stop hiccups by taking 9 swallows of water without catching my breath, but I was already swallowing more water than I could handle. So I decided to try cold buttermilk. It would always soothe sunburn for me, or the stinging burn of poison ivy, so I tried it. But it wasn't any good for that tobacco burn to my stomach or the hiccups either. The big ice box was in the back room, and we kept the 2-gallon can of buttermilk right in the compartment with the ice, so it was always good and cold. The first excuse I could find for going back to open the ice compartment door, tipped the can down, and tried to take 9 big swallows without catching my breath. It might have worked all right if I hadn't had a hiccup right in the middle of the 5th swallow. It came so quick and then so unexpected, I didn't have any chance to tip the can up, and the buttermilk ran down the sides of my cheeks and my neck and into my shirt. As soon as it stopped being sick, I wiped out as much of the buttermilk as I could reach with my handkerchief, but I didn't get it all, and it didn't smell very good. Mother had taught us all that it was wicked to lie, but I just had to lie to those women that morning. I couldn't tell them what had started all the trouble, and I didn't want them to know I was being sick. So I just told them the different ones anything that came into my head, and I don't think very many of them believed me. The longer that buttermilk was down inside my shirt, the worse it smelled, and my mouth tasted even worse than that. As I got a chance, I tried a piece of peppermint candy and some blackjack gum and even a bite of raw onion, but they all turned out bad instead of good. And before Mr. Durant came in with his morning orders, I'd promised myself 1,000 times that I'd never try to chew tobacco again. Whew! When Mr. Durant did come in, I stayed as far away from him as I could, and if I was still looking a little puny, he didn't seem to notice it. After he'd asked me how business was, he went right to work on putting up his orders. Then, when 12 o'clock came and Mr. Householder wasn't back, he told me to run along so I could get my lunch while he tended the store. About the last thing in the world I wanted was lunch, so I told him I wasn't hungry and would wait till Mr. Householder came back. But he pushed some packages together on the counter and said, "No, you run along. Your aunt ordered this stuff, and I told her I'd send it by you at noontime." I hated to go back to Uncle Frank's house that noon, smelling and feeling the way I did, but there was nothing else I could do. I wasn't so much worried about Aunt Hilda, but Grace was as nosy as a hound dog, and her smeller was just about as good. Before I left the store, I bit good and deep into an onion and chewed a piece of licorice all the way home. But I don't think I fooled Grace at all. She could always ask the kind of questions that would catch me if I was lying, and she caught me 2 or 3 times while I was trying to explain why I was pale and didn't want any lunch. She didn't come right out and tell me I'd never go to heaven. But all the time she was washing the dishes, she kept singing a church hymn about someone will knock at the pearly gates by and by, hear a voice saying, "I know you not," by and by, It got on my nerves so much that the tune kept going over and over my head all the rest of the day. Whew, it was nearly 2 o'clock before Mr. Householder came back from the funeral, and there wasn't any sense in going to school for only an hour and a half, so I stayed at the store with him, but he wouldn't say a word about furniture. When I asked him if he'd had any chance to talk to Mr. Maddox, he said, "Why, bless your soul. I talked to him more than any other one that was to the funeral. Knowed him right off the reel. Even had me ride out to the burying grounds and back in the same carriage with him." "Did you get a chance to ask him if?" Mr. Householder chuckled and asked. "About recollecting the time the hogshead of molasses got away from him? Lord love you, no. I couldn't have stirred that up again without laughing, and it wasn't the right thing to do at a funeral. But, by gory, he recollects folks that hadn't crossed my memory in a score of years. Folks that used to live hereabouts and has passed on or moved away. Well, 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 'twas a nice right funeral. Lots of folks there. It's a pity old grandma couldn't have saw the nice turnout for her and all the flowers. Bless my soul, the whole altar of the church was piled with them. Smelt like a..." Then he sniffed and said, "Kind of a curious smell hereabouts. Spill something?" "Yes, sir," I told him. "A little buttermilk spilled on me. Maybe that's what you smell." Then I stayed away from him as much as I could for the rest of the afternoon, delivering orders and washing shelves in the back of the store. It took Mr. Householder so long to tell everybody who came in about the funeral that he didn't have any time to say any more to me until closing. Then, as he was locking the door, he said, "Oh, by the way, you might tell your ma to go over to Mr. Maddox's house after supper, long about 8 o'clock. Dickie, he'll be there and looking out for her. Tell her not to make him no offer, and there won't be no need for her to tell him she's a widow woman, or about you children. Just say she'd be willing to take everything in the house off in his hands, lock, stock, and barrel, and let him set his own price on what he wants for it. Tell her there ain't no call to be scared. Dickie, he's turned out to be a fine man, and he won't rob her none." Mother was scared, though. Everybody was at the table when I came in from work. I told her what Mr. Householder had said right away, but it upset her so much she couldn't eat the rest of the dinner. When I'd finished, she said to Uncle Frank, "Why, I could only make myself ridiculous by doing a thing like that. If that house is nicely furnished, even if the things are somewhat old, the amount of money we could afford to spend right now wouldn't make a drop in the pail. Just imagine me walking in there with only $150 to my name and telling that man I want to buy everything in his house. Why, it would be preposterous." Then she turned to me and said, "No, son, right after supper, you must go over there and tell Mr. Maddox..." "Now, wait a minute, Mary Emma," Uncle Frank's cut in. "$150 might go a good ways toward buying that furniture if he wants to get rid of it in a hurry. And Hilda and I could scrape up a few dollars, too." "No, Frank, no," Mother told him. "You and Hilda have all you can do to take care of your own family, and we are not going to start leaning on our relatives. We'll buy our furniture piece by piece as we can afford it." All right, Uncle Frank said a little bit irritably. "But don't kick the pail over till you know what's in it. There's no need of going at this exactly as Gus Halter, Householder said. You might be able to buy the pieces you do need and can afford at a pretty good bargain. Then, too, if this man Maddox is as well off as Gus seems to think, he isn't going to be too hungry for all the money right away. He might be glad to take $100 or so down, then let you pay the rest of it out over the next year or two. If you don't want to go, why not let me go over and have a talk with him?" Mother pinched her lips together for a minute and then said, "No, Frank, I'll go myself. But you may be sure that if I buy anything, it'll be only such pieces as we can afford to pay cash for. We are not going into debt." From then until 8 o'clock, Mother was so nervous she could hardly sit still. And when she went out, she looked as if she felt the way I used to when I had to take a note home from school that I was sure it was going to get me a spanking. She was gone for more than an hour, and when she came back, she was so excited. She could neither talk like herself nor stop talking. She seemed to be halfway between laughing and crying when she opened the door, and her voice went all squeaky when she called, "Frank, Hilda, children, you never saw anything like it in all your lives. That house is furnished from cellar to garret with the loveliest old walnut furniture that I've ever seen in years and years. Dressers with acorn handles and marble tops, gate-legged tables and tapestry-seated chairs, four-poster beds and a beautiful square grand piano, and I've bought every stick and sliver of it for $50. Rugs, bedclothing, and even the dishes and dish towels. Oh, let me catch my breath a minute before I tell you the rest of it. I've run almost every step of the way back. She wiped a tear out of the corner of each eye and sat panting for a minute. Then she turned to me with a real sober look on her face and asked, "Did Mr. House Halter tell Mr. Maddox that Father wasn't living and that we had very little money with which to buy furniture?" "No, ma'am, I'm sure he didn't," I told her. "He said they talked about people who used to live around here 30 years ago." "Well," Mother said, "there is something very strange about this. Come to think of it, I don't believe I bought that furniture at all. I think he sold it to me, or rather, came as close to giving it to me as he could and saved my pride. And I don't think I thanked him adequately for it. I was so excited I could only think of getting back and telling you children about it. Just think of it. Less than a month ago, I was afraid we might be ruined, and now, within a week or 10 days at the most, we shall have the sort of a home I have dreamed of having ever since I was a little girl." She had to stop a minute to keep herself from crying. Then she went on, "And within a month, and if all goes well, I should have learned enough about the laundry business that we can strike out for ourselves. Now run along to bed, children. It's getting late, and you all need your rest." Wow, what great storytelling. I can imagine so much of that. I love you.